In the studio with us now, Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what you got going on?
Well, let's talk. Well, you know what? Let's what we've got going on. We have some beautiful trail conditions out there, albeit a little dusty and a little dry. So instead of talking about trails today, which we all know is great, just get up early and go. You know, that's probably the easiest thing to do. And be careful. It is crowded out there. Let's just review a couple things. One is, you know, if you're going up to the crest, the parking situation on the Wasatch County side has changed significantly. It can be costly. So it looks like people are actually responding pretty well. I mean, we were up there the other day, a bunch of us, and looking at the Bonanza Flat stuff. And actually, people are now parking on the Big Cottonwood side where there are no parking signs. Anyhow, that will probably change sometime soon as well. Most importantly, I think today that I'd like to talk about, we have put out, and you should have seen it posted in Facebook yesterday, a link to doing a survey for Mountain Trails. It's basically a trail survey. It will go out to almost any database, you know, with the city and the basin and so forth. We're really trying to get just kind of a review, kind of where people stand on things, like e-bikes. We're trying to figure out just what really the primary user out there, who that person is. You know, so we're asking you to tell us, are you mostly a biker? Are you mostly a hiker? Are you just a dog walker? So kind of get a better feel, zero in on a couple of those issues. Please take the survey. It can't take 2 minutes to do it. I mean, if you went really slow, it would take 2 minutes. And we won't have any ads or anything in it. So please help us out and take that, because it does help us weigh in on a lot of issues as they come and go, and certainly going into the future. Outside of that, have a great weekend. You know, things are pretty darn good out there. Just be safe.
So what is it that you want from the survey? You just want to, are you trying to find who the user groups are?
Yeah. Well, also, like we are for the e-bike issue, which has become probably something that I probably get a email on at least once or twice a week at this point. You know, should they be allowed? Should they not be allowed? And mostly addressing single track. Why you may think they shouldn't be allowed? Do you own one? You know, just trying to see what direction that's going, because it's coming, it's here. The manufacturers are certainly, if nothing else, shoving it down our throats. If you're a non-motorized person, you'll feel that way about it. Yet on the other hand, as we get older, that's maybe an acceptable thing as well. So where do we draw those lines? And also just kind of figuring out what age group, what gender, those things, it just helps us plan. So.
Okay. And then with regard to the work that's ongoing at Bonanza Flat, I know that the city's kind of taken the lead on that, but what if anything, is Mountain Trails working on? Trail alignment? Things
well,
like
we're
that?
First off, we're involved in the technical committee, so we're certainly there at an advisory capacity. You know, Mountain Trails has no regulatory capacity, which is great. We like that. But we are advising. We have started, and we are building the Bloods Lake Trail. So you will start to see our vehicles and stuff up there. The parking lot that's going to be built in association with that trail, the trailhead area, probably will get started in the next few weeks. And hopefully the trail and the parking lot will all be done at the same time. And that'll be the sort of beginning of a new kind of way to look at Bonanza Flat and utilize it.
Okay. And is that it?
That's it, Leslie. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Charlie.
You bet.
Charlie Sturgis is the executive director of the Mountain Trails Foundation. KPCW News Time now, 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we reported earlier this week, Summit County searchers found the body of 66-year-old Ray Humphreys of Lehigh, just a mile and a half from where he was last seen after he had been missing for a week in the Middle Fork drainage area of the Uinta Mountains. With some perspective now, Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez in studio to give us some words of wisdom about what you should do if you become lost or separated from your party in the backcountry. Good morning to you, Sheriff.
Good morning, Leslie.
So never a good ending when you find somebody who hasn't made it, but it's got to bring some closure, not only for your searchers, but for the family as well, huh?
Absolutely. In a situation like this, and if you recall from last year, almost a year to the day, we had Melvin Heaps go missing up in the Uintas. We never recovered him as of yet. You know, we're still hopeful. About 10 years ago, we had Garrett Bardsley go missing. You know, those families don't have that closure. We're at very least, this isn't the outcome that any of us wanted. The searchers go out there looking to, you know, find somebody. You know, they may be dehydrated, disoriented, but, you know, we bring them back home. In a situation like this, you know, as unfortunate as it was, at least the family gets to have that closure. They know that he's just not up there, still wandering around. We get to bring him home, and they get to give him a proper funeral.
Yeah. So the fact that he was only a mile and a half away, why did it take a week to actually find the body?
The terrain that he was in was so congested. I mean, it was actually just a shot in the dark that the spotter and the helicopter found him, because they'd flown that same area multiple times. We'd had searchers, ground searchers in that area. We had people on horseback. But it's so congested that unless you literally almost come up right on top of him, you would not have seen him. I think it just happened to be the right angle that they were flying in, and the right sun coverage that just opened him up to that one moment. So it's pretty dense forest up there.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
The big tall trees?
Big tall trees, and then a lot of undergrowth, rocks. And the other thing that made it a little bit more difficult is the clothing that he was wearing. It was a very subdued grayish color. It blended really easy with the terrain, whereas opposed to a bright orange, a bright green, like you see the searchers wearing, you can see that at a greater distance.
So any idea what happened to him? I mean, was his body found at the base of a cliff? Or?
No, I think there's a lot of factors that probably played into it. The cold, there's question of dementia. Now, I don't know that to be factual, but people had mentioned that he might have had suffered from slight dementia. But you take, if that was a factor, you take the cold weather, you take the altitude, his age, his conditioning, all of these things in consideration in one event. I think any one of them on themselves, probably not a terrible situation. But if you take all of it in one event, it unfortunately led to a bad outcome.
Yeah. Now, was he injured, or, I mean, did he suffer from just dehydration and hypothermia? We don't know.
We don't know. So a lot of those things, I mean, there were injuries, scrapes, bruises, bumps, such and so forth, consistent with the environment he was in. It was pretty harsh terrain, but it was not you might imagine, somebody getting lost in the dark and then falling off of a cliff. It was nothing along those lines. I think you took everything in consideration, dehydration, all of that just led to the bad outcome.
Yeah. How far was the campfire from the lake? I mean, how far did he walk down to go get water?
So from what we can tell from our measurements, we're only talking about 75 to 100 yards as away from the lake. And originally thought, could he have fallen in the lake? Could it have been that that's where he was at? And this lake in particular, the first probably 25 yards into the lake is only 5 feet deep. It just maintains a very shallow depth. So, I mean, shallow in the sense that you're not going to fall into a 30-foot opening. So that wasn't seem to be the case, that he just wandered off.
Yeah. Did he have a flashlight with him? Do we know?
It appeared that he had his headlamp with him, correct. He had a headlamp. There was some, from my understanding, there was a lighter with him. He had his wallet, which, had some papers in it. Potentially could have been used to start a fire.
Hmm. And he was found on the other side of the lake. So he did some walking.
He did some walking. And being disoriented like that. And the Uintah's, it's just unforgiving up there. It's unforgiving. And then 10:30 at night, and then as you keep wandering further, you get more and more disoriented. You don't have a lot of bearings, because in the daytime, there's a lot of peaks that you can look at as a bearing. If you go towards a certain peak, if you feel like you're not going to your camp, you can obviously use that peak and back out 180 from it. He had no bearings to go off of.
Yeah. How long was it before somebody went looking for him?
That's the other part of it, and that's, what I want to talk about is letting people know where you're going. But he was around the campfire with some family, and he was up there with, I want to say, about 20 family members. They're coming and going to their tent, coming to the campfire, and he had just mentioned to some family members that he was going to go down to the lake to get water to put out the campfire. Well, the group of people he told that to had gone to bed, and then other group of people had come out. They didn't know that he'd gone to get water, assuming that he probably went to bed himself. They stayed up around the campfire. It wasn't until the following morning when they were able to compare notes that they were able to say, I saw him last night at 10:30 going to get water. I came out at 10:30 and he was not at the campfire. I'm assuming he was in bed. So there was a communication barrier there, and I think that's part of what I'm here for, is to let people know when you're going to go out and do something, especially in the outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, skiing, fly fishing, let people know where you're going. And in a situation like this up in the Uintas, where it's such harsh terrain, not only is it bad terrain, but there's creatures moving around at night. Go with somebody, buddy up. Even a simple task as going and getting water and bringing it back 100 yards away should seem like a menial task to a lot of people. Don't take anything for granted in the backcountry. Go with a buddy, or at very least, let people know where you're going and have them be your spotter.
Yeah, when you'll be back.
And that you just don't tell them, I'm going to go get water, and assume that they will return. Wait for their return. Make sure they come back before you turn in to go to bed.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned he had a flashlight, so that's helpful, but batteries die. But, you know, another thing I hear often about is just wearing a whistle. Just
absolutely. Whistle, you know, and the interesting thing in that environment. Now, where he was, I think the whistle would have been productive because it was an open area, the lake area. There had been a lot of reflection of the sound. But, you know, you get in that dense forest, it just gets absorbed very quickly. But at whistles, flashlights, lighters, anything, and like I said, wearing the right colored shirt, anything you can do to help yourself out. And bottom line, if you find yourself lost anywhere, take a knee. Take a knee for the night, start a fire, stay put. The more you wander, the more we have to search further and further out and take into account a lot of considerations. But if you take a knee, wait till the morning light, and then try to get your bearings at that. That's the best thing anybody can do. I would recommend that if you're out and about and you somehow get separated from your party, or you just get disoriented, just stop, wait. There are so many people up in the Uintas. I mean, thousands of people that are camping, hiking. The searchers are coming. Most likely come daylight, you'd be found.
And in this case, the landmark, of course, was the lake itself.
Correct.
I mean, if you had just circled the lake.
Mm-hmm. You keep that lake on. Lakes around, they're oblong, they're square, whatever shape, but they come back to a starting point. So if you keep that lake as best as you can on one side of your body, your left side of your body, and you just keep walking, you will end up right back where you started.
Now, you had hundreds of volunteers join the search, including about 400 one day from the Garrett Bardsley Foundation. Mm-hmm. Again, that was the 12-year-old who had gotten lost and never found. Is that helpful, having so many people to manage?
So the really interesting thing with the Garrett Bardsley Foundation is that we have our Summit County Search and Rescue, Davis County, that, for lack of better words, the professional searchers, that this is what they do. They have we have GPS. We give them coordinates. We actually give them an area to go search. We have the horse teams. We have the helicopters. When you bring in the group of volunteers like that, the Garrett Bardsley Foundation is so well organized anymore that when they come up, they have a liaison that liaises with the professional searchers, and we will give them tasks to do, and that they now take that back to the volunteers, and they get those volunteers out working, and they are absolutely phenomenal. What we don't want is people self-deploying, though. We don't want that person that comes up that has maybe some familiarization with Uintas and self-deploying, not checking in with anybody, because they can become a victim. But if they check in at the volunteer station, we'll give them assignment. We will put them to good use.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention? What else is going on?
You know, things are going really, really good right now. I'd say, obviously, with all the heat and the traffic up in the Uintas, again, let people know where you're going. Keep a whistle with you. Anything to help identify yourself and maintain your fires. We got a big fire risk up in the Uintas right now, anywhere in Summit County. Make sure that you are extinguishing your fires. We had one fire just a couple days ago that the campers left it unattended, and it got a little bit out of control. We were able to get on it, but maintain your fires, please.
Okay, Sheriff Justin Martinez, thanks for your time
this
morning. We have the Utah Olympic Park has broken ground on a new 72-unit athlete and workforce housing facility. In the studio with details, I have the president and CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Colin Hilton. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we've got 72 units. How many beds are we talking about?
146 beds, and of those 146 beds, 88 are year-round apartments, and 58 are for short-term visits of 1 week or 2 week stays.
Okay, so what kind of units are we talking about?
They're pretty efficient in their size. The short-term units are essentially like a hotel room with two beds and a bathroom and a little mini fridge, and a first floor common kitchen for those short-term teams that are coming in, so they don't have to go out and spend money out every night. They can cook a pasta meal in the common kitchen. The 88 beds that are essentially an apartment building are one- and two-bedroom units that have full kitchens and are efficiently sized. They're not, your typical Park City apartment dwellings here, but they are similar to, like, student housing, affordable housing units that are geared towards having low-cost abilities to stay.
Yeah, so the short-term ones, are they on a rental, for rental basis, or?
The short-term are for like a nightly hotel rate, for which we are targeting $35 to $40 per night per athlete. So that has always been an impediment of especially our developing athletes when they come into town or have the prospect of, what, go train in Park City, I can never find housing. So this is our attempt to provide an affordable, convenient option right at an Olympic venue.
Okay, so you're going to have somebody manage that then? I mean, or you're just assuming
it
people are going to clean up their mess?
New position that we will be hiring in the fall as a housing coordinator, housing manager position. We already do sort of a reservation system of teams that are coming in and booking time to train in the pool or on the ski jumps. And this will be an added service to manage an apartment/hotel unit.
So who will be eligible for the long-term stuff?
So the long-term apartments, we are doing a combination of athletes in winter sport who are on every level of national team to development level athletes or those and it's athletes and coaches as they are looking to have a place to call home and, again, have it in a convenient location. This is also in a workforce housing for staff of the UOP. So we are targeting 30 to 40 beds for staff that are working at Utah Olympic Park. So for us, it's one of the larger affordable housing projects that are targeting staff of our park, along with athletes and coaches that are trying to chase their dreams and have a great place to do that, to spend overnight.
So the short term is based on a first come, first serve then?
Yep, and we'll be able to plan out. We have a lot of tryouts. National team will take bobsled and skeleton. There's always a October 2 week period where all of the athletes from around the country will come to UOP to do sliding trials to make the national team. So we'll be able to plan out with the national governing bodies some of those key dates. But we'll also be able to, on the short-term units, when we have visiting teams from Steamboat or Lake Placid or countries from around the world, we have the Australians and the Chinese and the Canadians that routinely come down, we'll be able to accommodate them in those short-term units as well.
Yeah, and then with the long-term, I mean, that likely the demand will be greater than the supply, then what do you do?
Yes, so I have two building pad locations. We're acting on the first one, a four-story building with these 146 beds. I've got a second location that I think will be perhaps paid for by a future Olympic committee as a part of we're sort of building these where we know when we host another games in the future, we'll be able to use this as a mountain athlete village for those competing in the Wasatch Pack.
So that would have give you some brownie points then, huh, for attracting that bid?
Certainly. And I would say we're quite proud and symbolic of the fact that we're not just having our venues open, but we're adding, in this case, housing services for athletes and staff operating these facilities. Nobody's really figured out not only how to keep the venues open and operating as training facilities and competition facilities, but we're adding to it. And that is, we think, a great statement in the around the world right now when countries are having a hard time even bidding on hosting a games, and we're showing that we're not only using them, but we're expanding upon them.
So do you anticipate having at least the long-term ones occupied year-round?
Oh, sure, yes. And we already have so much stated interest that, again, I think our challenge is going to be having a waiting list and being able to manage how we divide those out amongst athletes and staff of the UOP on the long-term units and filling those short-term units all times of the year so that we you know, we're financing this, and we're basically looking at this as a break-even operation for from a financial standpoint. I can tell you, anyone building affordable housing in Park City, I have a great deal of respect for. I've lost a lot of sleep and effort trying to make this work. We're going out on a bit of a limb doing this, but I know it's the right thing. We're committed to it. My board is solidly behind it. And with a groundbreaking ceremony in this last week, we had all sorts of great representation from the state and local governments. And it's terrific.
Yeah. So the Legacy Foundation is paying for this, though you did get some bonding authority from the county.
Yes. So Summit County has tremendously helped us both in the location. This location of where we're doing it is just below the Olympic Park ski jumps on the entry road of Olympic Parkway. Just on the edge of the park, which is terrific. It's close to the services of the junction for going to the grocery stores and the services, right off the trail system. But Summit County helped us. We did a land swap for the location of this to get it in a place that's tucked in against the hill rather than up on a more prominent location. And the county then is also helping us with a tax-free municipal bond effort so that we can get the lowest possible interest rates over a 25-year term.
Yeah, so how much are we talking about, the project cost?
The total project cost is $13.6 million. We did get a little bit of state funding support, about $1 million from the state to help us with the site work, utilities, parking, roadways. But the majority of it we're financing, and the incomes associated with these short-term and long-term rates cover our just cover our annual debt service payment.
Yeah, so athletes and service, you know, employees do pay monthly rent.
Yes, and sort of the targeted apartment rates are in the $600 to $700 a month rate, which anybody living and trying to find an apartment in Park City knows the rates are much higher than that.
All right, you mentioned a second building pad. How big could that be?
It would basically double. It would be essentially the same concept of another four-story building, adding another 125 to 150 additional beds.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's close access to Kimball Junction, so you're not going to have any kind of services up there that where you know we could get something to eat or.
Well, on the long-term units, they will be full-on apartments, so they'll have kitchens in them, which is a little different than what you see at the Colorado Springs or Lake Placid training centers. We eventually may provide, when we elevate our own food service operations up at the park, we might be able to do more than that. But we went with a model where the athletes are cooking their meals in their long-term units and having a common kitchen when they want to sort of be frugal in how they're spending on food.
Yeah. In terms of, I mean, are they going to have cars up there or?
They can. We'll have parking for this facility, but we also have right today a shuttle that runs and connects to the Kimball Junction Transit Center. Every half hour, we run a park shuttle down to that, and that's available all through the day.
Okay. And that would be year-round then, huh?
Yes, it is today.
All right. And so when is this scheduled to open?
We're targeting July of 2019. And we've got a great team of folks. Jacobson Constructions are general contractor on that. We're already excavated and doing footings and foundations, and we are just excited to get going on this because it's been a long time desiring to get this done.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about, so we're shooting for Olympics 2030, is that right?
That is the current target. We know there's still troubles with people bidding on 2026, but again, the issue with 26 is 2 years before Los Angeles has guaranteed summer games in 28. So our focus is on 30, and we're working with the USOC that now has a new leader that they just named a new CEO. And we're in a bit of a waiting pattern to see the actual process steps of whether they'll do a dual award in September of 2019 or whether they'll do a separate process. So we're waiting to see where that goes.
Okay. So a committee was formed. So you've just kind of laid low until the USOC has a chance to kind of catch up?
Yeah, we've been catching up about once a month, and we're you know, doing all the right things, highlighting kinds of stories like this of how our venues are being actively used and added to. But our efforts are, at this point, just standing back and waiting waiting for the USOC to have a process.
Okay. Anything else going on?
Yeah. I would obviously busy times. We got the Springer Tournée and the ski jumping events at the park this weekend. We have also recently named Jamie Kimball as our new park general manager. So excited. Jamie's been a long time as one of our key staff there. And as a part of our effort to manage how busy we have created this position. And Jamie is going to be awesome at this role. So super excited about that. We've got a new activities that we've opened this summer with a zip tour and a public airbag that they are able to have kids that are enjoying this tremendously at the park. So we are busy as everyone is this summer and would love to have everybody come out and try all of our new activities.
Okay. Hey, Colin, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
It's Colin Hilton, CEO of the Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Democrats held a special meeting last night in the studio with a recap. I have chair of the party, Cheryl Butler. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Now, the meeting was originally scheduled, my understanding, just to basically decide between the two candidates that you had for Summit County Recorder, and that was not necessary given that Alex Natt dropped out.
That's correct. It was somewhat necessary because officially we are tasked by the Utah Election Code as the Summit County Democratic Party Central Committee to select officially and formalize the selection of the one remaining candidate, Rhonda Francis, as our Summit County Recorder, and both as the interim recorder through the end of the year as well as the Democratic candidate on the November general election ballot.
So she's all but, you know, basically in office, given that there's no Republican candidate.
That's correct.
Right?
There are no other candidates, no other people declared their candidacy for that position. So her name will be the only name on the ballot in November.
All right. Now, did he step down on his own or did you ask him to? Or?
Oh, I would never ask him to. He definitely, it was a personal decision that he made. He reached out to, in fact, all of the delegates to explain the decision in a wonderfully composed email letter to everyone and has been very forthcoming in his reasons for resigning. He felt strongly that Rhonda was the better candidate and that he would perhaps run for a different position in the future. I, as a party chair, it's my job to encourage everyone to run for office. I think that it is a tremendous boost to the people in our county when they see multiple candidates running, people stepping up to be public servants. So I always encourage people to run. And I was very saddened and disappointed when Alex dropped out.
Now, what kind of turnout did you get at the meeting with your delegates?
So I have to admit, I was personally concerned that when we only had one candidate there, that our delegates would decide to stay home and enjoy the lovely Park City weather. But they definitely all came turned out. We had a terrific turnout. We had invited some of our local county officials to be there, and it's always fun to get a chance to talk one-on-one with them. We had two of the three candidates for Utah State Legislature in attendance, so they could meet the folks that turned out. And Lee Castillo, who's running for U.S. Congress in our district, was also in attendance. And Lee's a terrific guy. It's always great to hear him speak and to shake his hand and hear what he's got to say.
Now, did you need a quorum of delegates to officially nominate Rhonda?
Yes, we did. Per our bylaws, we need to have a quorum to conduct any official party business. And we probably had double the quorum in attendance last night. It turns out I worried for no reason. Our base is pretty strong, and they come when they know they need to be there.
Yeah. Any other business then needed conducting or?
No, no, that was it. We try to meet quarterly as a central committee. But sometimes we have a lot of business on the table and sometimes just a little. Last night was just the one item on the agenda officially. And then the rest of the time we were able to speak with the candidates and talk about the upcoming campaigns.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about the campaigns. I mean, what kind of funding are Democrats seeing for the state and national races?
So I think right now we're just starting those fundraising efforts. Our candidates are out talking to people. Of course, they're doing fundraising right now, but mostly they're generating enthusiasm for their campaigns and volunteers. They're really more looking for volunteers to help them out, knocking on doors, phoning voters, putting signs in their yard. That's going to be happening soon. There's all sorts of things that need to be done on a campaign. And so I think Lee Castillo said it best. He said that, you know, we don't have a whole lot of money right now, but what we lack in money, we have an enthusiasm. We have a lot of folks who are really excited about the campaigns.
Yeah. And when you look at some of the bigger races, the Lee Castillo race against longtime incumbent Rob Bishop, I mean, how does he move forward just knowing that just the fact that he doesn't even have an R behind his name?
So it's always an issue when you are up against an incumbent, somebody whose name has been in the press for years. And this is Lee's first run for major political office. And so his big task right now is to get his name out there. Our job as Summit County Democrats is to help him do that. So we're going to give him every chance we can to meet people here in Summit County. He's been out a couple of times now. He'll be here in the Miners' Day Parade. He'll be back out for a number of different events to meet people and talk with them and to really it's all around name recognition and then getting people to, once they recognize your name, to come and vote for you in November. Midterm election season is all around getting out the vote. Our unfortunately, many of our folks don't vote during the midterms. And so we're going to be working really hard to introduce our candidates and then asking the people to turn those ballots in when they get them in the mail.
Yeah. Now, will you be focusing on the Jenny Wilson Mitt Romney contest as well, or just take it more local keep it with the state legislature?
That's a great question. My role as county party chair is more focused on our local county elections as well as the state legislature. I am personally committed to helping my candidates flip a couple of seats in the Utah State Legislature. We are, in my opinion, poorly represented here in Summit County. We have potentially 5 representatives in the Utah State Legislature who are supposed to be representing Summit County. Not a single one of those 5 actually live here, and that bothers me personally. Not one. We have some terrific candidates, 3 of them, Eileen Gallagher, Megan Miller and Chris Neville, who are all running as Summit County residents to represent the Wasatch Back. And I think we deserve, here in Summit County, representatives who live here.
Yeah. And those are the Senate District 26 and the State Legislative House Districts 53 and 54. Do we pay attention to the one that... let's see, Brian King is just a portion of Summit County.
Yes, he's in House District 28. It's a very small piece of Summit County. We love Brian and all the work he's doing in the Utah State Legislature. He himself is running unopposed, and so we will not be spending an awful lot of additional time, you know, out there. Our efforts right now are really focused on getting Chris and Megan and Eileen's names in front of our voters.
Okay, and then we have another small, very portion of northern Summit County. It's in another Senate district?
That's correct. And that Senate district is not up for election this year.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Yes. If you're interested in helping us out or helping out any of the candidates, you can find links at our website at scdems.org. And we're happy to have you.
Okay. Hey, Cheryl, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie.